Welcome to the Legacy Podcast. This podcast is a series of conversations centered around understanding the values, beliefs, and intentions behind leaving a legacy. You will hear from successful business owners just like yourself who want to leave an impact for generations to come. Let's get started. Welcome to the Business Legacy Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Dio. I have a very special guest, Bobby Srivastav. I think I pronounced it right?
Srivastav,
right? Co-founder and Chief Product Officer of Ben Akiva. Welcome, Bobby.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for having me on your show.
Great. So tell us a little bit about Ben Akiva.
So Ben Akiva is we built a platform to help insurance carriers on the life, annuity, and health side to optimize their claims process. So we started off with optimizing the claim process. We did that with a beneficiary first perspective, hence the name Ben Akiva. Short Benny, short for beneficiary, Kiva's chamber for all beneficiaries. So we started our journey with working with the beneficiary backwards. So we started with claims. We moved to servicing, like policyholder servicing, because the number one issues with claims are all about data. And most of that data is because of the lack of good data that we're collecting from the policyholder. And so it reflects itself in the time of claim. And now we've got an asset retention module to really help the Benny at the time of claim to see if there's an opportunity to take that claim proceeds and turn it into new business revenue for the insurance carrier.
Interesting. Now, I'm going to say the number 68%, and you're probably familiar with that number. Tell me what that number is, because I heard it in your other interviews. I was pretty shocked at this number.
Yeah. So that's a stat that we heard in our research about the number of claims that go unclaimed for one reason or another. So if 100 people bought life insurance policy, 68% of that money doesn't go to your family member, which is a daunting number, right? And it's one of the reasons why when I heard that stat through Brent and really start to learn the claim process, is the reason why I put my first company, my first tech startup on hold to say, okay, I'm going to help solve this problem.
And how much is an unclaimed? Usually that happens per year?
It's $1 billion on average.
Yeah, imagine that, you know, having a family, they have a life insurance policy, but don't know how to process it. 68% are unclaimed. $1 billion is unclaimed. So talk about making a difference in people's lives through developing products. That's pretty amazing. So,
no, thank you, Paul. It's our driving forces. The misnomer is a lot of people think that money stays with the insurance carriers, but it doesn't. There's a word called escheatment, right? So after a certain time period, and it's all state-specific regulation, that money has to leave the carrier. If they have found that this person may have died and they can't find the Benny, or the Benny's not claimed it for one reason or another, that money goes to the state. That money doesn't go to the carrier. The carrier's not getting wealthy out of it. So that's a misnomer. So that's why we built Ben Akiva, is how do we make the claim, in order to solve the bigger issue, we have to make sure the claim process is as seamless as possible. And that's why we're moving on to tackling policyholder servicing, to make sure we're getting the right data, right? And then the beyond vision, right? Okay. Is if you come up with a great customer experience, why would that asset leave your company, right? Like if I give you good service, I have a family, I need life insurance for them, right? Is why couldn't I give those proceeds or a portion of that proceeds to help help protect my family? So call it like the circle of life approach.
What was the biggest challenge in designing the interface, or just working with it?
I had started a document management company. And when I made the decision to put that on hold, because you as a founder, no matter how many times people say, there's no way you can focus on multiple things. You won't be successful, right? Like you'll be mediocre at best. So when I decided to put that company on hold and say, okay, I'm gonna solve this problem with Bene Kiva, we got a lot of people that said, you don't have a problem. This is why are you solving it? And we're like, what do you mean? 68%, 1 billion, that's a problem. And then the other piece that we got was, well, why haven't other folks tried to solve it, right? So when we were thinking about from a user, like to even start, we were getting a lot of not a problem. Why are you trying to solve it? And that's why we did the research, right? The research really showed, this is why, you know, we preach in the startup community, customer validation, right? So it doesn't matter what your mentor pool or your other folks that are not in the industry say, right? They have assumptions. Look at the industry problems. If I go sit with the claim staff, guess what they're saying? I have a huge problem. It takes me 16 systems to process a claim. That's a problem, right? So that was our biggest challenge, is to make sure that when we solved it with knowing that we have bigger obstacles to face, meaning we have that whole legacy land that we have to tackle that challenge, because carriers, just like in financial services, in fintech, they're going to have legacy systems. It's not going to leave us. Like it's there. So how do you coexist with the legacy platform, and how do you build it so that you're always relevant? Mm-hmm. So that's the other challenge that we had, is how do we build this piece of technology and not be legacy in 2 years? Mm-hmm.
And by legacy, you mean the existing systems that are in place, that have been in place for decades upon decades, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And there's, you know, a lot of people don't think about it, but when you invest in a new piece of software, and if that software is not, you don't upgrade it, at the end of the day, that's going to become legacy.
Mm, interesting.
Because it's the technology landscape changes at a rapid pace. So if you're not investing in the new widget that you just bought, right? That's why we're a SaaS model, right? The SaaS model, it allows us to innovate and make improvements to the platform. So we're never legacy.
Yeah, that's interesting. When you asked that question, why is no one else doing it? What answer did you find? Why was not anybody else doing it?
Well, a lot of people, based on our research, what we found is the organizations fell into multiple camps in terms of who was trying to solve this problem. So you had the policy admin system, and their answer was, well, we have claims. You can pay claims through our system. Yes, you can pay the claim, but from a claim perspective, there's a huge claim process. You don't manage the process. An admin system doesn't have workflow, doesn't have the journey set up to solve, you know, the claim process. And you're not thinking about the family. You don't have that front end. You're in a back office application. So that was one thing that we found, is yes, you have the ability to pay the claim, but you don't have the ability to do the full claim management lifecycle. Then we came into other competitors. We have competitors, and what we learned about the other competitors is that they're going legacy because they're not innovating. They're moving on to other parts of the insurance value chain. And for us, claims, if you don't keep innovating on claims with the number of regulation changes, state changes, just the complexities of it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to move on to another problem to solve, right? Like we've got enough things that we can do in the claim side. So it allowed us to quickly go in to carriers to give them this value proposition of how, you know, don't think about your admin system as your claim system, because it's really not, right? It's one item in your claims value chain, right? But the whole value chain is this process that we built, right? Process and system that we built. And we were able to get, you know, we got our first customer in 2018 and quickly got six more in the next 18 months. And now we're working with over 17 customers.
Now, was there a measurement of before and after, before the system was implemented and then after? It's just like how long it would take to get a claim versus after implementing it?
So there were a few key stats. So one of the stats was efficiency. Efficiency, especially when you're talking about a back office process like claims, efficiency is always a good metric. So before and after, you know, we've been shared that the system gets customers anywhere from 40%+ efficiencies in day one, right? Mm-hmm. The other benefits are, of course, NIGO. And NIGO is not in good order. That's what the acronym stands for. And what we were seeing is we had several examples where the NIGO rates were up at one point in one carrier's journey, 47% NIGO, which means like every time I send you a document, 50% of the time is going to come back, right? Because it's not in good order. And that's what creates the friction in the process, right? So we were able to reduce that NIGO using our platform to practically zero without integration, and with integration zero, because once you know what you're trying to collect, you're not going to have NIGO, you know, because it's giving them a digital way. What I would say is an unintended consequence of our platform is the amount of time that it takes the staff to learn the system has been remarkable, because when people ask me, like, what's your training? How long does it take to implement? How long does it take to train? So a couple of things that we started out foundationally was we wanted to make sure that we are always innovative. We never want to be legacy. We don't want to be legacy tech. So in order to do that, we are a product company. We're not a services company. Do we charge service revenue to get you implemented? Yes. But we're not incentivized by giving you an implementation that's going to take you 12 months, 18 months, right? Mm-hmm. So we had to figure out in our process how to quickly get a carrier up and running, because our motive is you've got the product, now our SaaS fees start. Our SaaS fees get started once we've got claims live in production, right? Mm-hmm. So that's always been our incentive model. So that allowed us to stay relevant. And then from a training perspective, we had to make sure that it was easy, quickly adopted, right? So when people ask us, like, how long does it take to train a staff member? We're saying like 2 hours, because we don't even know the metric, because we do these training sessions and they're processing claims within day one. So that's the unintended consequences. We've been able to like really deliver in an agile way quickly. And we are the upfront training time is dramatically went from weeks. Like I used to see training plans take 7-8 weeks for a new claim adjuster or claim representative to now like they can literally start processing claims day one.
Interesting.
It's all baked into the system, the platform.
Yeah. As a business owner, as a person that would run a life insurance company, like the question would be, why do claims, processing claims matter? I could see how that could be glossed over. It's like, you know, it's up to the end user to do that. But then when you get underneath the layer of, well, how long does it take to process the claim? Let's say it's 16 hours. And oh, by the way, there's NIGOs of 50%. So out of that 16 hours, there's an additional 50%, another 8 hours just to process the same claim. And you're telling me that you're going from 8 weeks of training and development to 2 hours? Yeah, you know, you have my attention. Yeah. So I can see. Great. And
those are just direct, right? Those are direct costs, right? Like even calculations, right? Like we've saved upwards of, you know, a headcount on just manual stuff that they were doing. But the key piece is that I think our industry always tends to, like you said, gloss over. We've been talking about like, how do we the industry from an insurance perspective has focused so much on new business. And it went from, hey, I got to have all these distribution avenues to get to customers. Awesome. That's, you need to innovate on that. The second piece is, okay, once they're in, how do I reduce the lapse, right? Like, how do I get them not to lapse? Okay, that's a huge problem, right? It's all about customer retention. What we often forget is at the time of claim, people think it's a debt, it's death, right? They're gone. But what they don't understand is, but the person that's filing a claim could be a potential new customer that's not in your ecosystem. And if it is in your ecosystem and you give them a bad experience, guess what? You just lost a customer.
Yep.
So you have so much opportunity to retain a new customer as well as an existing customer, because in our research, we've seen so many times, if you walk a user through a bad process, what will happen is that person would tell their advisor, take out my business and give it to somebody else. Like, I don't want to do business with them anymore. That's the power of the claim process, right? People talk about, well, I have business models baked in that I'm going to spend this much money in a cost to acquire a customer. But what they forget is there's a difference between a cold lead and a warm lead. And you're working with somebody that's a potentially a warm lead. And if you give them a nice experience, you have the opportunity to help that family member, help them carry that legacy forward, right?
Yep. Yeah. Just to put things into perspective, let's say you're a parent and your husband dies or your wife dies. Then the insurance company says, hey, we're going to send you 30 pages of documents and we need to make sure that they're filled out. You need to fax them and mail them over. Meanwhile, you're grieving, you're putting together funeral arrangements, picking all these other things. So the last thing you want to do is fill out hand and mail it. And then when you fill it out, let's say it fills out 7 days later, the insurance company comes back and say, hey, you missed these three documents. You're not going to be able to pay your mortgage for the next 2 months. So call the bank and let them know that the life insurance company is taking a little bit longer than usual. So essentially, the amount of impact is unlimited. Given this kind of context and everything that's going on, were you always this inquisitive? Were you always addicted to solving problems? Like, tell me a little bit about that.
Hashtag solving real problems, yeah. Right? When I started in technology, and it's the reason why I'm in tech. A lot of people talk about the maker community, right? Like they build beautiful things. I like to build beautiful things with software. That's like the maker in me. And I gravitate towards very challenged problems, right? Like when somebody tells me it can't be done, I'll figure out a way to get it done, right? Like it's that quest to solve like bigger problems that create bigger impact, right? So that's what gravitated me in tech. And that's why I, even when I was working at large organizations, why even switched roles, right? Like my last role before I came and decided to be a business owner was with a nonprofit called Center for Creative Leadership. And I literally joined because they were solving such a huge problem. Like to me, if you don't build good leaders, what's going to happen to our society? I love that mission. I let go of corporate. And I mean, they were like another big, like they're a big nonprofit. So they're political too, but you can't escape that. But it allowed, you know, I gravitate. That's the, I guess maybe like a millennial in me. Like I'm not happy with just climbing the ladder. I want to create impact.
Out of your business experience so far, what would you consider your best business decision?
I would say the best business decision was, there was a time in every entrepreneur's life where your side hustle becomes, whether you're going to continue make this your side hustle or you're going to focus on full time, right? Take this journey to full time. And I remember the day that I did that. So best investment was I had a transformational coach that got me out of this mindset of type A. I'm very type A to saying, no, you got to look beyond that, right? So I had written at this point, this is like January, February of 2017. And I had written like my vision board, and my vision board at this point, I still was having my first company. Bene Kiva was brewing, right? Like I hadn't made the decision, right? And I had just put in my card to say September of, I don't remember what date, but September would be my last date of working at a company. I wrote this card, put it on there. And things gradually started to progress. But I was in the fork in the road back in July to say, we were getting so much traction with Bene Kiva, but without an investment at this point, right? So from our company perspective, we have three founders. So Sovin, I already forced him into leaving his job. So both were husband and wife team, right? So out of the three founders, two of us are married, and one we forced to saying, you got to build a platform because this, we're going to do something really cool. And then September was when I decided to go full time. And it was a tough decision. And I think the best decision I made, because if I needed to take that risk in order for this to do what it's doing. Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a hard decision, but it's that leap of faith. You're not going to have all your numbers all aligned, right? Your financial plan is not going to be perfect, but that leap of faith is what it was scary, but we did it. And it's the best decision I made, because I think if I would have held back and became my ultra conservative Asian person that I am, we wouldn't have seen the success that we're seeing right now.
That's great. Now, in contrast, what would you say is your worst business decision or the thing that brought up the most light to your situation? Yeah.
So the worst decision would be, there's so many, like, right? Like, it's so good, right? Like all yeah. Worst decisions make you a better person. I would say like not letting go of an employee sooner. I've been reading this Netflix book. I think it's like, No Win-Win, or it's written by the CEO of Netflix and another author. Amazing. And they talk a lot about these concepts. And I was like, man, I should have pulled the trigger earlier, because they talk about, like, if you don't have the right person on the bus, get rid of them. Always look for higher density talent. Higher density talent wins. And I think in my entrepreneurship journey, I think we've treated a lot like family, like we'll take up the slack. And sometimes as a founder, you need somebody you can't be the slack taker for everybody. Mm-hmm. If they're not the right person on the bus, get rid of them sooner. Don't drag it out.
Yep. Back to the reason for the podcast. When you think of legacy, what do you think of? And what type of legacy do you want to leave?
So when I think about legacy, this question, you asked me this before too, and every time I think about it, it changes, right? Because it's so important for me, like, legacy is what my mom did, right? Like, if you think about it, right? Like, she paved the road, right? Like, she took a ton of risks for us to, like, you know, she was in India, stay-at-home mom, took a leap of faith, came to United States. I was born here. I mean, think about all the risks that she took, and it's the legacy that she's doing. Like, she left for me is like, you can't back away from risks. You can't be this ultra conservative. Ultra conservative doesn't leapfrog you and your generation to success, right? So I want to continue that path, right? Like, my legacy is I want to create this path for all the women entrepreneurs that have imposter syndrome, that get in their own way to say, no, just do what you love, do what you want to do, and build that path, right? There's way too less females in our entrepreneurship community, less minorities. You know, how do we tackle that, right? So my legacy is still being created, because it's the more success we have as entrepreneurs, the more that we can give back, and not just give back in time, but give back in money. So we can propel this generation of just leapfrog, right? Like, we've not progressed as women leaders in so long, right? The numbers are still like in the teens of women leaders. And we celebrate every one leader that makes it into the CEO of the 500. I don't think that's the legacy. The legacy should be, that should be the norm. We should be celebrating it regardless, right? Like, that shouldn't be a cause of celebration, because it's so normalized and so equalized that we're not thinking about these single level demographic profiles. Do you see what I'm saying? There's deeper issues that we've not tackled, because we're so stuck in the surface, but the surface needs to be there, right? Mm-hmm. In order to tackle some of the deeper issues. And I think that's what I want the legacy to be. It's like to go the next level, the next two layers deep of the onion, and start to pave that path.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Bobby. Thanks for doing this. Where can we find more about you and learn more about Ben Akiva?
So, best place, LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. Just look me up, add me, and then benakiva.com.
Great. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Legacy Podcast. Now, if you can do us a favor and leave a review, any type of stars on any platform that you use, would be greatly appreciated. For more information about us, the other co-hosts, and the Legacy Podcast, go to businesslegacypodcast.com. That's businesslegacypodcast.com. Have a great day.